Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I'm joined, as always, by Richard Justice, and we're going to talk about the Rookie of the Year selections here in 2017. No surprise, it's Aaron Judge and it's Cody Bellinger, and no surprise, it's unanimous. They are the first time since 1997 that both Rookie of the Year winners were unanimous selections. And Richard, obviously, you know, there are award votes that make you bang your head against the wall, and there are award votes that you know, you're kind of fortunate because there was no clear headache here. Maybe there was some difficulty in deciding how the pecking order should be beyond these two when you're casting your ballot for AL or NL. But boy, these guys made it pretty clear and easy with the, you know, Judge breaks the rookie home run record, Bellinger breaks the National League rookie home run record. These guys were absolutely epic here in 2017, leading both their teams to October.
The suspense was, is there anybody of the 60 votes that are going to be cast, is there any guy that's not going to vote for either Bellinger or Judge? And then we can scream, you idiot. I mean, there was no other choice. And you know, and both these guys are great stories. The fact is that Aaron Judge struck out half his at-bats in his rookie season, or his debut season last year. He hit 179, and we didn't know what the guy was capable of. We didn't know if he had strike zone discipline. And for him to come in and lead, I mean, to lead the American League in walks, to break the all-time rookie record, I mean, he was so disciplined. He was so much fun to watch. He had a ball 121 miles an hour. It's just, it's fantastic. He's the first Yankee to lead the majors in WAR since A-Rod. You know, when you mention guys like he hit, I think, 33 homers at Yankee Stadium. That's the most since Babe Ruth hit 32 there at the Polo Grounds in 1921 for a rookie. It's pretty good. It's just pretty amazing for the things that he did. And, you know, Bellinger didn't get called up on April 25th. In spring training, we said, oh, what are they going to do with Bellinger? Well, we love him, but there's no place for him. Then Adrian Gonzalez got hurt. Then Jock Peterson got hurt. And he showed up in San Francisco on April 25th and did what every rookie's supposed to do. Where do I go? And they, as it turns out, maybe they should have directed him to the Giants clubhouse. But it was phenomenal to see what these two guys did.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll dig deep on Aaron Judge in just a moment with our friend Mark Feinzen. But talking more about Bellinger, you know, we saw in the World Series, we saw the highs and lows of the Bellinger experience, right? I mean, we saw the Golden Sombrero game, and actually two Golden Sombrero games, I believe. But we also saw some absolutely huge hits. And it kind of brings me to my question for you, Richard, which is, what's this kid's ceiling as he goes on to, you know, make the inevitable adjustments that will come in his sophomore season and beyond, and now the weight of expectations upon him, you know, where does he go from this huge year?
Yeah, well, he's going to see one curveball after another. The thing about that, though, is, Anthony, how many pitchers have a great curveball? And if you go to home plate and you're sitting on a curveball, you're going to get a lot of curveballs in your eyes also. But the bigger picture is, he's had 548 plate appearances. He now knows what the scouting report is. Can he adjust? And we even saw it during the World Series that he started to bang hits around again and look more comfortable. And when he does that, you know, the Dodgers started the season, they had no leadoff hitter. Chris Taylor became that guy. He started the year in the minors. They had no cleanup hitter. Cody Bellinger became that guy and became, you know, a candidate for the MVP and the easy Rookie of the Year call. So he knows where it's at. And I just have a feeling with both these guys, their bat speed, their instincts and all that, and their work ethic, you're going to have to figure some other way than just throwing the guy one curveball after another. And if you do that, he's probably going to walk 100-plus times.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He's got a long swing. He's shown the ability. We saw it in the World Series. There were moments where he did shorten that swing up when he needed to. And again, he did come through with some huge knocks. So definitely excited to see where things go from here for Cody Bellinger. But it's also interesting where he figures into Dodgers history now. Back-to-back Rookie of the Years for the Dodgers. He joins teammate Corey Seager, of course, who won it last year. And 18 overall Dodgers have won this award. So, I mean, it's obviously fitting that it's named after Jackie Robinson. And it's all the more fitting, Richard, that, you know, Jackie Robinson was, of course, a Dodger, because they have absolutely dominated this award.
Yeah, and it starts with Jackie Robinson. It starts with Branch Rickey's creation of the farm system. Literally, a lot of what we know as the structure of baseball began with this idea of a farm system that Branch Rickey came up with, and the Dodgers consistently, in terms of young players, have done it just better than anybody's ever done it. you know. And so long term, you know, it's in a salary in an era where, you know, it's not a salary cap, but you have limitations on what you can spend. And I think we've seen in free agency, you cannot buy a championship. So you have to have a productive farm system and have back-to-back rookie of the years. That's a good way to do it.
Well, after the award was announced, Cody Bellinger discussed what it feels like to be part of that long list of legendary Dodgers rookies.
Now that the season's over, I'm really trying to reflect, you know, how crazy that this season was. And, you know, to have this award right now to top it off. And like you said, to be a part of those big name guys is really special to me.
All right, shifting gears now to the American League side of the equation and Aaron Judge, who, of course, was not just a finalist and expected winner of this Rookie of the Year award, but he's also a finalist for the AL MVP honor. And this is something you could not have forecast back in spring training when Aaron Judge was just fighting for a job. He reflected on that after the Rookie of the Year award was announced.
You know, taking it back to spring training, you know, fighting for a job, you know, that's been my mindset every spring training. You know, even when I was in the minor leagues is, you know, I got to go out there and earn a spot. You know, nothing's ever given to you, you know, so that this past spring training it was a fight. And, you know, once the season began, you know, I was told that I'd be the starting right fielder. You know, even then, you know, still, you got to earn your job every day. You know, you got to put in the work, you got to put in the time, you got to produce. So, you know, it still hasn't really settled in for me, because even next year, you know, going into next year, I'm still going to be fighting for a job, trying to earn my right field spot.
Let's bring in MLB.com columnist Mark Fiennes in now to talk about Aaron Judge's rookie of the year, because Mark, being based in New York, saw quite a bit of it. And Mark, obviously, we shift now our attention to, as far as Aaron Judge is concerned, to the MVP bid. It's hard to know what to expect in that little battle there between Aaron Judge and Jose Altuve. Hard to know how that shook out. But what are your thoughts on that award and Aaron Judge's chances of winning the MVP?
I think Altuve probably wins the award, but I don't think it's going to be a landslide by any means. I think the fact that Judge had such a big September and really helped the Yankees surge into the postseason, whereas the Astros had a huge lead in their division at the All-Star break and didn't have a great second half. Obviously, they won their division by plenty, but the fact that Judge had that just monstrous September, I think, may have opened some voters' eyes, but I do expect Altuve to win.
Mark, when you use names like Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth, that's pretty good. Can you put some context, find some context for us for the season that Aaron Judge just had?
No. You know, it's when you have a guy who puts up numbers that no rookie has ever put up before, you're really, you know, you're treading into sort of uncharted waters. You know, he was just spectacular. And the fact that you look at his numbers overall, you know, from not just the 52 home runs, but the on-base percentage and slugging percentage and the fact that he led the American League in runs scored, you know, he wasn't just a power guy. This wasn't just Mark McGwire hitting 49 home runs and, you know, not necessarily doing a whole bunch else. He was a complete player, played good defense, and really was the guy that made that lineup go. And the fact that he was able to put up those numbers while having, you know, a 5 or 6 week slump after the All-Star break that was, you know, people were talking about whether he just should be demoted at that point or benched or whatever it may have been. And the fact that his numbers ended up where they did, just really impressive overall. And I thought it was really important that he bounced back with that September, because we saw him struggle mightily when he was called up at the end of 2016. And everybody said, well, can he adjust? And then it looked like after the All-Star break, he basically saw nothing but breaking balls the entire way. And goes, well, if you just keep throwing him breaking balls, he's never going to hit another home run again. He's basically Pedro Serrano from Major League. And the fact that he was able to make the necessary adjustments and bounce back with that huge September showed me that he has it in him to make those adjustments. And if he can continue to do that throughout his career, he's going to have a really long, productive career.
Yeah, I mean, that's even when he was at his worst, talking, you know, early in the second half and people were saying, oh, is it the Derby? Is it the shoulder? What's bothering this guy? And he's still getting his walks. He's still getting on base. And that's how you finish with the second highest OPS by a rookie in history. Only shoeless Joe Jackson had a higher OPS than Aaron Judge's mark this year. So, but yeah, I mean, we saw it again in the postseason, right, Mark? I mean, the breaking ball diet. He had to make adjustments even within that month.
Yeah, and that's going to come up. I mean, look, clearly he's a fastball hitter. And, you know, when breaking balls are presented to him repeatedly, he has struggled. But again, I think the fact that he's shown the ability to make adjustments along the way, I would imagine, you know, if I'm him, I probably go and buy one of those pitching machines that only throws breaking balls and just hit that all winter, you know, because he knows what he needs to work on. It's not a secret why he struggled. I wouldn't be surprised if the shoulder played into it. And he's not a guy, even at his age, who's going to use any excuses. He's a very accountable kid. and the Yankees weren't going to make any excuses for him. I wouldn't be surprised if the shoulder was an issue, but we'll never really know, at least not until he writes his book after his career is over.
You know, Mark, he hit a ball. StatCast has him as hitting a ball 121 miles an hour this year. But midseason when the Yankees were in Houston, I'm sure you remember this, on a Saturday night, he had a ball 111 miles an hour that probably got about 8 inches off the ground and didn't stop and hit the wall. And, you know, in terms of that, he might have been the most entertaining player in baseball to watch by a wide margin.
I don't know if you know this or not. He's pretty strong. And I mean, watching him and watching, you know, it struck me the first spring training that he was with the Yankees, which I want to say was 2016. He would go take batting practice, and guys who had been 10, 12 year veterans would stop to watch him because you'd hear the ball come off his bat and it just sounded different. It's so impactful when he hits a baseball. It's really quite a thing to watch. And the fact that he was doing it against BP is one thing. To see him do it against, you know, big league pitchers and the best big league pitchers, really impressive. And, you know, the Yankees stuck with him through his struggles after his, you know, his bad debut at the end of 2016. He wasn't handed a job. He earned it. I mean, you think about the fact that he came into spring training not knowing if he was going to have a starting job or whether he's even going to be on the major league roster. Opening day, he hit eighth for them. So, you know, the fact that he worked as hard as he did and did everything he needed to do and blossomed into this player this year, I'm really personally excited to watch him go out there next season and try to, you know, do an encore for this year.
Mark, before we let you go, you're down in the general manager's meetings in Orlando, Florida. I want to touch on a couple news and notes there, but you mentioned getting to see Aaron Judge up close and personal throughout 2017. You also got to see Carlos Beltran quite a bit from his time in the Bronx, and he announced his retirement on Monday. He finishes up with 435 homers, 565 doubles, 1,587 runs driven in. When you reflect on that career, obviously, I think some pretty strong Hall of Fame credentials. That'll be an interesting debate moving forward. But when you think back your time watching and interacting with Carlos Beltran, any stories or memories stand out?
You know, just watching him was a treat. And, you know, like you said, I covered him for 3 seasons in New York towards the end of his career. I wish I had been able to cover him on a daily basis when he was at the peak of his playing power. Because when you go back and look at those numbers he put up with the Royals and with the Mets, you're talking about a guy who really, I think, warrants a spot in Cooperstown. You know, he didn't hit 500 home runs. He fell 275 hits shy of 3,000. But this was a guy who for 2 decades was a solid player hitting in the middle of lineups on contending teams. And when you got to the postseason, which I want to say he did 7 times in his career, he outdid his normal numbers. He was a great postseason player, 4th all-time on the switch hitting home run list behind 3 guys you've heard of, Mickey Mantle, Eddie Murray, and Chipper Jones. So I think he certainly has the resume. And I think on top of that, you know, Ken Rosenthal made a point earlier. We were talking and he said, we talk all the time about the character and, you know, that being a strike against certain guys. There was nobody in the game during the last 2 decades with a higher character than Carlos Beltran. He was not only his philanthropic efforts and he's a Roberto Clemente Award winner, et cetera, but the impact he had on young players. And you've seen it really in the last 3 or 4 years, guys like Judge, guys like Gary Sanchez, Greg Bird, they all talked about what an impact he had on them, sort of learning how to be a big leaguer. And even into this October, when he finally got his ring, even though he didn't play very much in the postseason and certainly in the World Series, you heard guys like George Springer and Alex Bregman talking about, you know, just sort of the impact he had on them in the clubhouse. Remember, Springer had that terrible, terrible ALCS, opened the World Series with 4 strikeouts. And he said that it was Carlos Beltran who sort of sat him down and said, don't worry about any of that. You know what you can do. Focus on the next game. And Springer took that to heart and went on to win the World Series MVP award. So I just think the impact that Beltran's had both on and off the field, and obviously a really impressive career numbers-wise, I think he's got a very, very strong case for the Hall of Fame.
And, you know, I'm very excited about the next chapter of his career. He wants to manage. I think his wife and family want him to take a year away or whatever. But he wants to manage. And his relationships with players, the way he worked with young guys, the team meeting he called after Game 5 of the ALCS. I mean, really, I think it gave the Astros a reset. Marwin Gonzalez would tell you, my breakthrough season is because of my talks with him. You know, how he reached out to Darvish after the Gurriel-Darvish thing. You know, and a little thing like the Astros held, Brian McCann really did this, held a burial service for Carlos's glove at midseason. And, things like that break up. And it was because it was Beltran that made it so great because they love the go. So A.J. Hinch sent him a text at one point in the season, said, "Are you good to go in right field again tonight?" And he texted back, "I'm good to go. I'm not as old as you by 2 years."
You know, it's funny you mentioned McCann. I talked to McCann right before the World Series, and we were talking about Beltran and his quest to get that elusive World Series title. But we were talking about him as a teammate and what he meant to that team, even though he had really stopped being an integral part of the lineup. McCann said he told some of those younger guys earlier in the season, "You're never going to play with a guy like Carlos Beltran again in your career. So take advantage of it, pick his brain." And Beltran was a guy, he just loved talking baseball. He was happier sitting by his locker with guys, whether it was young guys or veterans, just talking about the game, situations, scenarios, than he was with anything else, besides being with his wife and children. He loves baseball. And I spoke to him in his first interview after he officially announced his retirement. And he said, "I have such a passion for baseball, but at some point it's time." And I think he realized that, he wasn't the player he once was. I think that meant something to him. And he does want to spend time with his family. It was very hard for him this year. Going to Houston, his wife and kids stayed in New York during the school year. His daughters both go to school in New York. And he was in Houston by himself for those first two or three months of the season. It was really hard on him. And I think they do want him to take a year away. That said, if the Yankees came calling and said they wanted to talk to him about that open managerial spot, he's interested in talking about it. And I think the fact that it's in New York is one of the few reasons that he would consider it, because he would be home with his family, for a majority of the time. And he also said, look, this is the New York Yankees, and you don't get a chance to manage a team like that very often. So, if they hire a manager now, it's possible that job doesn't come open for 10 more years. So I think he'd be open to that idea. Short of that, I do think he will take at least a year. But this is a guy who wants to be involved in the game. He loves the game and has a huge passion for it. And I think you'll see him on the bench at some point.
Well, whether he manages or coaches, he already had a huge impact on the generations that came after him. And to that point, guys, our producer Matthew gave me this fun but somewhat disturbing, discouraging note that with Beltran retiring, Adrian Beltre and Bartolo Colon are the only players left who played in the 20th century. So that might make you feel a tad bit old here. Yeah.
There were a couple other notes I saw today. He was the last player active who had ever played in the kingdom. And our friends at Cespedes Family Barbecue tweeted out earlier that he was the last remaining player from the old video game Backyard Baseball, which, of course, is for those of us old enough to remember that game, was a huge popular game during our youth. So, Beltran's the last of a bunch of guys. And, it'll be interesting to see where his career goes from here. But I think anybody who got to know him at all is better for it, because he's really one of the good guys I've been around in my 17 years covering this sport.
Absolutely. They might have to put that Backyard Baseball thing on his Hall of Fame plaque. If it comes down to it. Other news from the GM meetings is we have a new GM. Alex Anthopoulos takes over the Atlanta Braves gig. And of course, the former GM up in Toronto. And in the last couple of years, he's been one of the many assistant GMs in the Dodgers realm under Andrew Friedman. So, Mark, what'd you make of that hire and that situation he inherits there in Atlanta?
I think it's a great hire. I think this is a guy who's proven his worth as a general manager and coming into a situation, obviously, with the turmoil in Atlanta. He's a guy who can certainly come in and make his presence felt on that front office and on that roster. You can't really ask for inheriting a better situation in terms of he's got a loaded, stacked farm system, some really good young players coming up, some good young players who made their presence felt in the big leagues last year. I think for a guy who essentially took over a Blue Jays team that had been irrelevant for quite some time and made them relevant again, got them back to where they were, put together that team that got back to the ALCS and got there 2 years in a row. I think he's a great guy to bring into Atlanta to try to restore the Braves' name. And, when you've got a brand new ballpark that you really need to get fans into, he got fans back into the Rogers Center in Toronto. So I really like the hire for Atlanta.
Yeah, Richard, what are your thoughts? As Mark alluded to, there's obviously a looming decision to be made from the commissioner's office in terms of punishment for the Braves, but it seems like when the dust settles from that unfortunate, ugly situation, boy, it's a really golden situation to inherit, navigating around that challenge.
Yeah, and I think this is a great second chance for Alex Anthopoulos. I don't think he should have ever been let go in Toronto, but, you know, I'm not in the middle of that. But he did a great job there. He's a guy that drafted Aaron Sanchez and Noah Syndergaard. He traded for R.A. Dickey. He's the one that traded Roy Halladay to the Phillies and got back, you know, Michael Taylor and Travis and what's the Mets catcher, D'Arnaud, and Kyle Drabek, who at the time was a top prospect. This guy knows how to put together a farm system. He knows how to put together a staff, and he knows how to put together – he knows the makings of a winning major league roster. So, yeah, I am so happy for him to get this chance. And what, as you said, you know, we're going to get past all the punishment and every crime and punishment. But this is a message to the commissioner's office. Hey, we're starting anew here. This is a new day for us. And you do what you have to do in terms of punishment, but we're taking off. And this is a great guy to me to lead the Braves into the next chapter.
And you know what's interesting, Richard? You talked about him leaving Toronto. When Mark Shapiro took over there, he was offered a 5-year extension to stay there, and he left of his own choice, wanting, you know, autonomy in the baseball operations department. And it seems like he's got that in Atlanta. He's going to be the guy who's calling the shots. So, he gambled on himself, you know, didn't take that extension, went to LA. I think his official title was vice president of baseball operations. But like you said, he was one of the merry band of GMs in Los Angeles. But it certainly seems like he's landed in a great spot for himself. And I think he's probably very excited about what lies ahead for the Atlanta Braves.
Maybe he'll trade for Josh Donaldson again.
Or sign him as a free agent next year. You never know.
Yeah. Well, for when that happens, Mark Feinzen will be all over it for MLB.com. I want to thank him for joining us from the GM meetings. I want to thank, as always, Richard Justice for joining us for his insights. Awards week continues on Tuesday with the Manager of the Year honors. And you can get all that coverage on MLB.com. Until then, thanks for listening.